Honor among vermin. I left the city of Miragliano, as I had quit the imperial city of Altdorf, a frightened cur with its tail tucked between its legs. I had terror in my soul, and prayed fervently to Sigmar that I might pass unnoticed by the powers of the old knight. It happened late one evening. I had been speaking with Brunner for many hours. We were situated in a small wine shop near my own rooms. The hour was late when the bounty hunter at last declared that I would have to question him further some other time. We left the wine shop, the light of Mansleep bathing the filthy streets in a pale silvery light. My companion, as was usual for such a predatory nature, carefully considered the night streets, his piercing gaze covering the entire street at a glance. He did not linger over any person, nor upon any window, doorway, or darkened alley-mouth. Yet I had a feeling that he saw as much with his quick glance as I would in an hour of close examination. His keen mind picked out every detail. Brunner had, as I have mentioned, an amazing memory and a craftsman's eye for detail. Abruptly, Brunner asked if there were any free rooms at the boarding-house where I was lodged, for we were quite close by. I replied that I believed that there were, and the matter was settled. The bounty hunter led me through the dark streets, saying that he would see for himself what manner of luxury his recollections furnished me with. We reached the boarding-house, and Brunner secured a room quite close to my own, at a price considerably lower than my own. Once more, I reflected that the best champion of honesty is fear. I followed the bounty hunter up to the room the landlord had allocated to him. He gave my room a glance, then settled in, taking his leave of me without a word. Feeling for all the world like a dismissed servant, I made my way to my own chamber. However, I had only just begun to dug off my boots when the door opened. The bounty hunter gestured with a thumb at his room. "It ill suits my level of comfort," he hissed. "You sleep there. I'll take your room." I sputtered out a protest, but Brunner reminded me that it was his stories that elevated my livelihood. Like a scolded dog, I gathered up my boots and night clothes and left the room, hoping that the landlord's daughter, Maria, did not think to pay me a visit this night. The bounty hunter was capable of almost anything. With his ruthless impulses and lightning-fast reflexes, he might kill the girl before he was even aware who had stolen into the room. Or he might welcome the company. I was not sure which scenario troubled me more. So it was that I woke in the small hours, a foul stench filling my lungs. I did not rise from my bed, for I recalled Tylian tales of the Strigoi, the blood-sucking fiends who smelled of the grave and ripped the throats of their victims as they slept in their beds. After my encounter in Altdorf, vampires held an especial horror for me, and I became as still as a corpse, hoping that whatever exuded such a stench would not notice me. Yet even in terror, my mind was analyzing the situation. The odor was not that of a rotting corpse, but a reek of filthy fur, like an ill-tended beast from a menagerie. My hearing became even more sensitive as my fear mounted, and I could hear the soft padding of naked feet stealing across the wooden floorboards. The soft, furtive steps drew ever closer towards the bed, and with them the stench filling my lungs increased. I held my breath, trying to wish the intruder away, and screwing my eyes shut desperately, lest I should see what horror now hovered over me. The shrill titter that sounded above me chilled my spine. It was a sound of cruel and inhuman amusement. Almost against my will, I opened one of my eyes. In the soft light streaming through the unshuttered window, I saw a hideous shape from the realm of nightmares. It was shaped like a man, though slender and small, its back crooked. A dark cloak covered its shape, and its paws were coated in a verminous black fur. Two red eyes gleamed from the shadows of the hood, and a long rodent muzzle peeked forward, whiskers twitching as the nose scented my terror. Two long, chisel-like fangs jutted downward from its upper jaw, and I could see the moonlight dance on something metal clutched in its paw. It was a horror from childhood, a nursery fable given flesh. How often have we tried to frighten naughty children with tales of the Skaven, those scheming ratmen who lurk in the shadows, plotting the destruction of humanity? How often do we laugh at their fear for such tales, for we, in our wisdom, know such tales to be foolish and fantastic? Can we no longer remember our own childhood terrors? When did we decide that those things were not real? And who told us that such things could not be? I watched in horror, frozen to the spot by my disgust, by the sudden flooding of my heart with all those childhood nightmares. The Skaven drew a long, foul dagger from the worn leather belt about its waist. The red eyes gleamed more brightly, and I knew that I looked upon my death. Suddenly, the door was thrown open. The Skaven uttered a sharp squeal of surprise and leapt from the bed, scrambling toward the window. But it never reached its escape. The dull thuck of a crossbow sounded. Once, twice, and yet a third time, all in rapid succession. The monster's body twitched as the first bolt slammed into its mutated flesh, and as the third bolt struck its cowled head, it fell to the floor. A long naked tail twitched for a moment, then fell still, as the vile creature breathed its last. Brunner walked into the room. He still wore his armor, though he had removed the almost ever-present helmet. I watched his hard, grim face as he stared at the expired monster, turning its carcass over with the toe of his boot. He had a curious repeating crossbow pistol still aimed at the ratman. He did not seem to be mortified by the monster's loathsome visage, or concerned at its presence here. "You knew it would be here," I accused, my fear giving me enough courage to confront the bounty hunter. "You used me as bait." The bounty hunter reached down and removed a small pouch from the Skaven's belt. I heard the jingle of coins as Brunner hefted the sack. He opened it, smiling as he saw the gold it contained. Then he withdrew something else from the sack, a piece of leather that still bore fur on one side. He read whatever message was written on it, then replaced the scrap of leather in the pouch. "What is this all about?" I demanded. "By the shadow of Mor, what is that thing?" Brunner nudged the corpse with his foot one more time. "Just a messenger, from someone making good on a debt." The bounty hunter then began to speak, to spin a tale of what had befallen him in my home city, in Imperial Altdorf, beneath the very feet of the Emperor. Nidreg crept slowly through the dark room. His silent steps went unerringly past piles of books, tables laden with scrolls and jars, past the dozens of black obstacles that awaited him in the near lightless room. But the young man was no stranger to this environ. He had been this way many times before, though never with such purpose as now moved his thin, lean body. A small pool of light blazed in the midst of the shadows. Nidreg paused, catching his breath, and stood still, watching, listening, and most of all, waiting. His eyes gleamed in the flickering flame of the old copper-bound oil lamp that had its origins in the desolate wastes of far-off Araby. The lamp was resting atop the large work-table of dark Drakwald wood that dominated the room. Papers were piled in one corner of the table, while books and jars of dark liquids were spread across every remaining edge of the wooden surface. In the only break in the mountain of leather-bound books and glass pots, a stoop-shouldered man was bent forward, his pale, long-fingered hands working within the sphere of light cast by the lamp. The man's head was covered in long gray hair, topped by a rounded cap of black felt, marked with symbols and stars of silver and azure. Nidreg watched as the wizard continued his labors. The old man stabbed a lengthy needle-like device into a small bowl, then removed a tiny scrap of flesh from it. With his free hand, he grasped one of the glass jars and pulled it into the sphere of light. He dipped a needle into the jar and shook it until the fragment of flesh fell free and slowly sank into the dark liquid. Then he thrust the needle into the blazing flame of the lamp until it burned red, then withdrew it and set it upon a sheet of moist vellum to steam and sizzle. The old man leaned over the glass pot in which he had dropped the fleshy fragment. Then he returned to a steel flame that held up a thick piece of glass in a brass claw. He raised a wrinkled hand to his head, pulling back the long strands of hair that threatened to slip into his eyes. Looking through the piece of glass, he concentrated on the fragment of flesh, the dark liquid, and what effect their union was having. Nidreg licked his lips nervously and drew the knife from his robe. It was still in its sheath of dark leather, but the young man imagined he could feel heat ebbing from the blade. He had been warned to keep the weapon sheathed at all times, until the very instant he was ready to strike. He had been told that a mirror's touch, the simplest contact with the naked blade, would kill, but not quickly or cleanly. Nidreg cast an apprehensive look at the sheathed weapon and took a deep breath. The seated figure was so involved in his labor that he did not notice Nidreg's shadow fall upon him. It was almost a summary of their relationship. The old wizard had never paid any but a most cursory notice to his apprentice. Nidreg had served Lothair the Golden for 5 years, and in all that time his magical training had amounted to little more than hurrying about Altdorf, securing the compounds and chemicals his mystic patron required. While it was true that Lothair had shown some compassion by schooling him after the colleges of magic had so summarily rejected his application, Nidreg felt that his apprenticeship had been steadily degrading into nothing more than servitude. But now the would-be wizard had found a new patron, one who promised to teach him far more than Lothair could ever have. The apprentice drew the knife from its sheath. The weapon glistened wetly in the flickering light, its black surface coated with a foul ichor that seemed to ooze from the very metal of the weapon. Nidreg spared the knife only a moment's glance, for the gray head of his mentor had lifted, as though he sensed something was amiss. Whatever warning sense disturbed the old wizard, it was not quick enough, for Nidreg swiftly stabbed the black blade into the wizard's back, piercing his heart. A long, low gasp sounded from the magician, and he slumped over the table, disturbing the flasks and jars. Nidreg stepped back, leaving the still-dripping dagger in the old man's back. He watched as green drops slithered from the blade's edge and sizzled on the fabric of the wizard's robe. Nidreg bent forward to retrieve the blade, but as his eyes fell upon the blood flowing from the wizard's mouth, where he had bitten through his own tongue, he flinched away from the danger. The blood that was pooling on the table was not simply crimson. There was a thick streak of dark foul corruption mingled with it. Once again, the young man recalled his patron's words of caution. "Do not handle the blade for longer than you need to." But he would need to touch it again to accomplish the rest of his task, for his benefactor had told him that a blade must not be found in the wizard's body. Even a charred, blackened skeleton would look the part of a murder victim with a dagger in its back. Nidreg squatted on the floor, pulling a heavy book from the top of a pile. He opened the leather-bound volume, ripped several pages from the binding, and clasped them in his hand to form a crude mitten. He stood again and reached for the dagger sticking from Lothair's back. With as quick a motion as he could manage, he pulled the dagger from the wound and tossed it onto the table. The slimy drops of venom still sweated from the gory blade. Nidreg hastily tossed the pages in his hand, over the weapon. He did not watch as they darkened and curled when they came to rest upon the dagger. He smiled, nervously, fearing and envying the lethal enchantment upon the blade. He reached toward the flickering lamp to engulf the evidence of his crime in fire, when a thought occurred to him. He was not without his own magic. Picking up the violated book once more, Nidrek began to mutter and rub a dark, salt-like powder between the fingers of his left hand. As he continued the incantation, he ripped pages from the book with his now blackened fingers. He tossed the pages about the room, careful to place most of them around the dead wizard, and, just as importantly, the subject of his final study. When each page came to rest, the paper burst into flame. Very quickly, a dozen small fires were blazing about the room. Very shortly, the entire study would become a raging inferno, obliterating all traces of Nidrek's crime. The apprentice paused, admiring the flames his magic had brought into being. No lesson of Lothair's had ever been so grand. No, the spell the apprentice had invoked had been taught to him by the new benefactor, a small sampling of the secrets and powers Nidrek's new patron would reveal to him as payment for this night's work. Shouts of alarm from the street outside brought Nidrek out of his reverie. The room was now engulfed in flame, the ancient books and carefully collected relics shriveling and cracking as the flames licked about them. At the table, Lothair's body was burning like a torch, the artifacts on the table before him already lost in the dancing fire. Nidrek tipped his fingers to his brow and saluted the old wizard's corpse as he hurried from the room. From the shadows, a pair of beady red eyes watched the flames dance from an upper floor window across the cobbled street. A small hiss of excitement escaped the watcher's mouth as he saw the fire ravage the home of the wizard Lothair. His agent had performed just as he had anticipated, but he had ever been a good judge of men, able to determine their capabilities and find their weaknesses. Now all that remained was to sever the link between himself and the fool-turned-assassin, and he would be in the clear, with no connection between himself and his mistake. The household of Duke Verletz had been taken ill. Indeed, most of the household had perished, including the Duke himself. His death would firmly put an end to the lunatic idea to renovate the sewers of Altdorf. The Duke had a mad notion to install piping and tubing in the hundreds of thousands of buildings in Altdorf to let the waste of each house be carried directly into the sewers without being first dumped into the street and carried away by the dung-gatherer or rainfall. It was the ambitious scheme of a maniac with the Emperor's ear. And there were those who did not like such a state of affairs. So the Duke's household had become ill, and the wizard Lothair had been summoned to try and identify the nature of the seemingly sorcerous ailment, and find a way to neutralize it. This, too, was a state of affairs that could not be tolerated, because an entirely different neck was on the line should the wizard succeed. The observer fought down the nervous impulse to chew on the object clutched in his hands. There was no need to fear. His error was now going up in smoke and flame. All that remained was to meet with Nidrog one last time and give him the reward that was his due. The watcher's face twisted into a snarl. The fire was burning quite well now, but still the fool had failed to emerge from the building. Suspense was not something he enjoyed, so there would be an extra measure of pain when he caught up with Nidrek for creating such a strain. There were enough causes to instill fear in him, not the least of which were those to whom he himself was answerable. He did not need some one-use man-tool upsetting him so. The watcher hissed a sharp curse and slid lower in the basement window from which he observed the scene. Nidrek had emerged from the burning house, but he had dawdled too long inside. He was carrying a large chest in his arms, and the bulging pack was dangling from one arm. Instead of looking like an innocent witness to an unfortunate fire, it now looked obvious to everyone that Nidreg was a thief and a murderer. The Watcher cursed again, as a trio of figures in gleaming armor plate, with deep, rich, ostrich plumes flowing from the crowns of their helmets, converged upon the idiot. Nidreg tried to run, but did not release his hold on the burdensome chest and pack. The knights easily caught up with him, smashing him to the cobblestones with the butts of their halberds. Skrym Gnawtail succumbed to his nervous habit and clenched the much-abused end of his long, naked tail into his fanged mouth, nibbling at the scarred flesh with his chisel-like teeth. He slunk away from the window, drawing the shabby cloak of black wool still tighter about his mottled gray and brown fur. He turned his long-muzzled rodent face toward the two larger figures beside him in the basement. Skrym let his tail drop again, tucking the much-abused appendage beneath his cloak with two furry, long-fingered hands. He barked a sharp command, and the two slaves scuttled forward. They were larger than Skrym, the size of a decently grown human, though leaner and much less broad of chest. The two slaves were naked, save for filthy loincloths of tanned rat hide, and their brown-furred bodies bore the marks of lash and fang. Most horrible of all, their mouths had been sewn shut with a crude cross-stitch of rat gut. Skrym gestured imperiously with one set of his paws. The Skaven scurried forward and pulled up a loose stone in the floor of the basement, exposing the narrow tunnel that wormed its way from the cellar to the vast sewers beneath the ancient imperial capital. The two slaves stood aside for their master to go in first. Skrym set a foot on the wedge of the pit, then snarled and gestured for one of the two slaves to go first. It was doubtful anything would be waiting for them below, but the Skaven would feel better with at least some warning if there were. After the mute ratman disappeared down the hole, Skrym climbed down, leaving the last slave to replace the heavy stone behind him. The Skaven scampered down the tunnel behind his slave, his keen eyes finding a path even in the absolute darkness. As he hurried along, Skrym's thoughts turned to what he would do now. His luck had betrayed him at every turn in this enterprise. An hour more, and that idiot would have fallen into the Skaven's paws, removing the last link between the man and the Duke's death, and the true facts concerning that demise. Nor could Nidreg be arrested by any guardsman, but a patrol of the Reichsguard, the Emperor's own, which meant that instead of gracing some common keep's dungeon, Nidreg was now enjoying the hospitality of Karl Franz's own prisons beneath the Imperial Palace itself, a palace Skrym Gnawtail would not risk trying to enter. Indeed, even the most skillful of the Clan Eshin assassins would be loath to chance the Emperor's dungeons, for measures had been taken to protect the place from Skrym's kind, sorcerous alarms that would react to the presence of any creature of chaos. Any assassin Skrym sent to finish the job might ask too many questions, and worse, might ask them of the wrong Skaven. No, Skrym decided, as he emerged into the foul-smelling labyrinth of the sewers. A human was responsible for getting him into this mess, and it would take another human to get him out of it. The Dancing Fox was a sinister-looking building, a three-story structure that dominated one corner of a broad market square. The narrow windows faced outward like the arrow slits of a castle wall, framed by wooden shutters that had been painted in the same black that coated the exposed support timbers. There was always a crowd in the establishment, merchants fresh from their custom in the square, patrons who managed to have coin within their purses after visiting the hawkers and tradesmen who filled the square each market day, and those of a more larcenous bent, thieves and pickpockets who preyed upon seller and customer alike. But the thieves had their own predators. Brunner sat at a table, peering from the shadows. He was studying each face as it passed into the vast, triple-tiered common hall of the tavern. A black steel helmet concealed his face, and he wore a belt of throwing knives across his chest. A long-barreled pistol of exceptional craftsmanship rested upon the table in front of him. From his clay stein, some white froth slowly slithered its way to the stained wooden surface of the table. He watched a pair of men enter the tavern, noting the notched, maimed ear the fatter one had. His memory dredged up a name to go with the ear, and a price to go with the name. He let a thin smile split his face, and reached for the beer stein, his gloved finger wiping away the foam to grip the handle of the clay mug. Now he would wait for the man to conclude whatever business he had in the tavern. Providing no better mark presented itself, Brunner would follow the fat man as he left. There was not a large contract on the smuggler, but it was enough to justify the 3-day journey to the Reichland town where the itinerant magistrate, Judge Volkberg, was currently located. Brunner watched the fat smuggler boisterously greet a pair of well-dressed men who had a look of the port city of Marienburg about them. Just then, a dark shape slipped into the chair opposite the bounty hunter's seat. Brunner gave a start, his hand gripping the pistol on the table. Rarely was the bounty hunter surprised, especially in a tavern, and on the hunt as he was. Yet the wiry figure in the shabby cloak had been so furtive in his advance that even Brunner's cautious, roving eye had failed to notice him. Brunner immediately forgot about the fat smuggler, focusing his angry gaze on the seated interloper, as well as the barrel of his pistol. The figure raised its hands in a placating gesture. Brunner noted the slender, thin hands, covered by rough gloves of coarse and dirty wool. The cloak was of more crude material, though it had been dyed black at some point. The scent of a cheap, pungent perfume wafted from the figure. As the unwanted guest raised his head, Brunner could see that beneath the hood, a mask of black cloth completely concealed his features.
"No harm,"
the man said, his voice thin and shrill. Brunner stared at him dubiously, keeping the pistol trained upon him.
"I speak say."
The man paused, uncertain how to elaborate.
"Need hunter,"
he said at last.
"Man hunter."
Brunner tried to follow the butchered Reichspiel. The speaker was certainly not a native of the Empire, though even Brunner's wide-faring ears were unable to identify his accent. It was not of Kislev, nor even of the Tylian cities, nor did the shrill tones suggest the melodious speech of elves or the thin whisper of goblins. But the next words, however poorly spoken, rang like music to the bounty hunter and quieted the questions arousing within his mind.
"Much gold I pay spend,"
the cloaked figure said. The gloved hand scratched within the folds of the cloak and placed a pouch upon the table that chinked loudly with the metallic ping of coins rubbing against each other. Brunner, with one hand still on his pistol, for his doubts had not been banished, reached for the bag. He slid the pouch across the table, undoing the thin cord that bound the pouch. He let his eyes fall to the open pouch, and then looked once more at the masked visage of his companion. He removed one of the gold coins and tapped it against the edge of the table, as though the sheen might scratch away to reveal lead underneath. But the sheen held true. The coin was indeed gold, as were its many comrades in the pouch.
"You have my interest," Brunner said flatly.
"Give twice. More when kill slay."
The voice scratched as the figure leaned back. Seeing Brunner's hand relax on the grip of his pistol, the cloaked head darted about to see what eyes might be watching their transaction.
"Who's the mark?"
the bounty hunter asked. The cloaked figure cocked his hooded head as though confused.
"Who do you want me to kill?"
the bounty hunter explained.
"Weirdmaker. Warlock."
"A wizard?"
Brunner asked. The figure grew silent for a moment, as though considering the bounty hunter's question.
Then the head bobbed in a crude approximation of a nod.
Wizard, yes,
he agreed. A gloved hand slipped into the folds of his cloak, removing a rolled piece of stained leather.
Prisoner,
the voice added as Brunner unrolled the leather scroll to reveal a scroll of lines and scratches. It was a map. A crude map, but a map all the same.
Locked Captain Emperor Manbarrow's.
The speaker paused, again seeming to collect his thoughts, and to translate them into the structure of the Imperial tongue.
Much like Weirdmaker not leave Barrows,
the speaker said.
Not have Weirdmaker say speak to Emperor Man.
The map, Brunner said, tapping the leather scroll with a gloved finger. A section of the sewers? The head tipped in a slight faltering nod. Beneath the dungeons, how do I get in? A hand pointed at a small scratch near one of the lines.
Tunnel in wall,
the shrill voice explained.
Open into manhatch.
The wizards? Brunner asked. The cloaked shape shrugged, a gesture the figure seemed comfortable doing. Brunner sighed. Do you know how large the dungeons of Karl Franz are?
Work, earn gold,
the cloaked man snapped, his temper making his voice even more shrill and unpleasant.
Not give all, must look seek.
The hooded head again scanned the room to see if anyone was listening. Brunner gave a short laugh. All right, I get the idea. He reached forward and closed his hand about the sack of gold. I'll figure where your friend is. Brunner set a pouch into a leather box fixed to his belt. And send him your regards. The cloaked head cocked like a bird puzzling over a worm. The bounty hunter sighed. I'll slit his throat. Then he won't say anything you don't want someone to hear. The tittering laugh that hissed from behind the mask made Brunner's hand return to the pistol, such was its unnerving, unnatural sound. The speaker flinched as the bounty hunter stared hard into his masked face. The bounty hunter's eyes gazed into the red crescents that peered from behind the mask. Where do I meet you when the job is done?
Alley run, behind Butcher Lodge, Fleischerweg.
The shrill voice replied. Brunner nodded his head. When?
When Weirdmaker is dead,
the shrill voice hissed.
Hunterman come when dark, when Butcher Lodge alone. Hunterman find gold then. Need Weirdmaker slay kill soon, or not give spent gold. Day and night, not more.
All right, but bring twice as much money when you meet me. The death of a wizard is not an easy thing, the bounty hunter stated, studying the sinister man. In truth, what he had been paid already was enough for him to accept a job, and that was what made him uneasy. The strange figure's reaction to his raising of the fee was not what the bounty hunter expected.
Gold not problem,
the voice uttered with the same unsettling titter of laughter.
Small Weirdmaker, easy strike kill, but gold not problem.
Still laughing, the lean figure rose from the table. This wizard have a name? Brunner asked, a demanding tone in his voice. The cloaked patron froze, cocking his head to one side, as though it was a curious thing to require the name of the man upon whom he had put a death mark.
Nidrag,
the voice pronounced, before slipping away into the shadowy crowd. Brunner watched the figure disappear and considered the gold in his pocket and the mysterious shabby man. He reached forward, tipping the stein to his mouth to wash away the afterscent of the departed man's cheap perfume. Skrim Gnawtail looked from side to side as he scuttled toward the mouth of the sewer. When he was satisfied that no one was looking his way, he dropped to all fours and scampered across the filthy alleyway like the vermin he resembled. He slipped through the narrow opening, dropping 10 feet to the dark tunnel of muck-lined stone walls. The Skaven's nostrils drank in the stench of the sewer, but even that mighty reek could not entirely drown out the odor of the cheap perfume he had been forced to douse his fur with. Scrim removed one of his gloves and raised a gray, hairy paw to his nose. His face wrinkled with disgust as he cast a murderous look at the Tiamut slaves who had been waiting for him to return. He slashed his claws against the face of one of them, enjoying the way the brute flinched. It was not their fault that Scrim had been forced to don his unpleasant disguise and walk among the man-things again, but nothing lessened the irritation seething in Scrim's scheming mind. Such petty retribution, even against a hapless lackey, eased the Skaven's mood somewhat. The Skaven walked over to the edge of the slime-coated walkway, peering at the foul brown water. The sharp tang of the filth caused Scrim's nose to twitch, but he was more accustomed to this than the overpowering reek of the perfume. To a creature who saw the world through his nose as much as his eyes, it was like being nearly blinded. With another sullen look at his slaves, the Skaven dropped into the filthy water, splashing about in the slime for a moment before submerging entirely. When he emerged, clumps of waste and even more unsavory substances clung to his wet, dripping pelt, and a foul odor wafted from his fur, but at least the stinging scent of the perfume had been washed away. Scrim snapped a command, and the two slaves fell into position, one before and one behind their master. The Skaven paid his guards no further attention as they made their way through the dark sewers. He was lost in his own thoughts. The man-creature he had hired was well known among the smugglers and traitors Scrim had occasion to deal with, and his reputation was indeed terrible. He would be able to accomplish the task, Scrim was certain. With Nidreg gone, there would be no further connection between Scrim and the unauthorized use of the red pox he had employed against the Mad Duke. With Nidreg gone, he could stop worrying about the retribution the fanatics of Clan Pestilence would exact upon him if they connected Scrim, the plague spores that had infected the house, and the plague monk agent who had stolen the spores for him. Scrim was saddened by the loss of the filthy creature. It was rare to find Skaven amongst the plague monks who were capable of being bribed. Still, Scrim believed in the old saying that it is a wise Skaven who collapses his tunnels behind him. Once Nidreg was gone, there would be only one more link to sever. It would be easy enough. Humans were, after all, inferior and witless creatures. Scrim raised his tail and began to nibble at it nervously. Still, the stories they told about this bounty hunter were not to be discounted. He looked at the slave ahead of him, then cast a glance over his shoulder at the other one behind. Perhaps he would purchase a few more guards before he met the bounty hunter behind the slaughterhouse to give him his reward. A shiver crawled through Scrim's body. Yes, he would get some more guards before facing those merciless eyes again. Caution was not cowardice, and even if it was, only Skaven with very short lives held cowardice with any manner of contempt.